Welcome to the Human and Technology Podcast. This podcast is for anyone who develops, distributes, or uses technology. For all those who always have the feeling that technology overwhelms or dominates them. For everyone who wants to know how to deal with technology in everyday life. For anyone who wants to understand what technology does to us and how we can get our lives back. This podcast is for those who want to make technology sexy. All the product developers, designers, UX, UI professionals, product managers, CTOs, and CEOs. And it is for you. My name is Dr. Peter Ryska. My friends call me Dr. Peter. I am your host, and I am happy that you are here. Don't stand so close to me. If you hear a police song now in your inner ear, then you will probably be of my age. And if you're younger, check it out. It's a very nice song. But I will not talk about music, and I will not talk about the band called The Police, and not about this particular song. I will talk about the closeness and the distance in the relationship between humans and technology. In the relationship with other humans, we have a constant adjustment of closeness and distance. In some situations, we are closer to others. In others, other situations, we prefer to have a larger distance to other people. And with the corona pandemic, we learned in the past year and a half that distancing, social distance, has a certain advantage, but also we experience the pain that is connected to that, not hugging other people, not being closer to other people, not being in concerts and clubs and being close to others. So it seems like a certain amount of closeness is necessary for humans, is important for humans. This closeness clearly dominates in interpersonal interactions. The question arises as what this close distance relationships between humans and technology looks like. So can we mirror the experiences that we have in human-to-human interaction to human-technology interaction? In this podcast episode, I'd like to discuss this topic, and I will use three technologies. They are applied mostly in automotive contexts, but also in others. And two of them create a closeness between humans and technology, and one creates more like a distance between humans and technology. There is a certain skepticism about technology. It comes and goes and waves. For example, we had in the early 20th century, The cars were pretty new, and they were seen extremely critical. They were noisy, they were dirty, they were experienced as very dangerous. And so there was, for example, in England, a law that required a person with a red flag walking in front of every car driving, which makes it totally ridiculous because, I mean, then you can walk or take a horse or whatever. But that was just an example to show how technologies that we see as totally normal, that we totally accepted in our lives over the years, that they were seen extremely skeptical in other times. Another example is the nuclear power in the 1970s, 80s. And that was seen as a great savior of energy production, but also seen very critical due to the connected dangers. And is almost gone, at least in Central Europe and Germany. But some of the climate experts want the return of the nuclear power to reduce the carbon dioxide footprint. And so it goes up and down. But the general trend is totally clear. We are having more and more technologies in our lives, in our environment, in our workspaces, in our private spaces, in our pockets, everywhere. So although we have waves of skepticism towards technology in general or specific technologies, the trend is clear that we have more technology in our life. For a long time, it was unimaginable that intimacy, meaning very close proximity, very close closeness, intimacy, that could be created through technology, by using technology, by means of technology. The sociologist Alex Lambert, since we talked about music earlier, this is not the country musician Alex Lambert, it's a scientist called Alex Lambert. He speaks of social media intimacy, meaning the closeness that is established through social media, by using social media, and with that through technology. And he's talking again about an intimacy between humans, where the technology is working as a moderator, as a bridge. And in doing so, he postulates the end of the prosthetic nature of technology. A few words about this. Sigmund Freud, the German psychoanalyst, stated in 1930 that technology, or that we as humans create a godlikeness by using technological prosthetics, and this that we are not really firm with them, that we are not really good with them, that we are not really okay with these prosthetics. And so he states that there will be more of that in the future, but it will be a cause of problems. It will solve problems, but would also be a reason of problems. And I'm using this quote in my keynotes because it shows very well why we have problems with technology, why we have problems with HMIs, with user experience, why this entire thing, the communication, the interaction between humans and technology is a problem at all. And Alex Lambert, the sociologist, sees the end of this through social media, through creating intimacy with WhatsApp, with Facebook, with messengers, with whatever we use for modern means of communication. The user experience of closeness versus distance relates to pleasant versus unpleasant. One is not equal with the others. It's more like two independent dimensions. So technology may be very close to us and pleasant or unpleasant, or it may be very distant to us and for that reason pleasant or unpleasant. And so, opposed to Alex Lambert and Sigmund Freud, I would like to discuss about the closeness and the distance and the relationship between humans and technology, and not the closeness and distance of the technology determined relationship between two humans. So, a little different view, but it remains on how distant is a technology to us as humans. We have various user experiences in human technology and driver-vehicle interaction, and proximity is one of that. So how close is one technology? How much are we merged with the technology? But also, are there any blind spots that we may not see due to the merging, to the closeness of that? And in general, the technology is getting closer and closer to us. If you have a look in back in history, in the late 60s, early 70s, until the mid 70s, the computers were hidden somewhere in dark basements. Only experts that were hardly accessible could operate them. So they were faraway technology, and only expert had in general access to it. And so at the end of the day, we were having a very, very distant technology. Then in the early 80s, the PC, the personal computer, came up. So technology, computing power moved to our desk. It came closer to us. In the 1990s, it became mobile. So we had laptops that we could carry around with us. With the smartphones, in 2007, the first iPhone came out. So the computing power technology moved into our pockets. So we had it ready to be carried around everywhere, and so we had it in our pockets. Today, we see many technologies that move to the surface of our bodies. One, the very obvious one that we see is the smartwatch. So we have a constant contact between our skins and this technology. There's also contact lenses that you wear that measure the amount of sugar that you have in your tears, in your tear liquid, which correlates with the blood sugar. So for diabetics, this is a very good way to have a constant surveillance of their blood sugar. We have printable electronics that can be sticked to our skins. So yeah, we have this technology moving on the surface of our bodies. And the next step then will be that technology, electronics, will move into our bodies. We have this already, for example, pacemakers for heart muscles. Or we may have artificial insulin pumps that we carry around with us, either on or in the body. So there are various technologies, but that is only a very beginning. The final vision is, whether we like it or not, that we will be cyborgs one day, meaning that essential parts of our body, of our biological bodies, will be supplemented, will be supported, will be replaced by technological devices. But I don't want to go that far here. I have selected three existing technologies and want to use it to discuss this closeness, proximity, distance effects that we have here. And all three technologies are a bit beyond the classic HMI that we have. But all of them are relevant for the user experience that you have. And as I said, most of them are implemented in cars and vehicles. There may be applications outside vehicles, but I will discuss this under the vehicle aspect here. So two of them, the first two ones I will discuss have the experience of closeness, of proximity, and the third one has the experience of distance. Let's start with the first one. That is biometric measurement, biometrics in the human vehicle interaction. And under biometrics, I summarize technologies like fingerprint, face recognition, iris recognition, or as I read about it for the first time while I was doing the researches for this podcast episode, the measurement of muscle microvibrations that we have. And it seems like they're highly individual, like a fingerprint, like an iris shape. So this might be another way of having an individualized recognition. They are used often, not today, but in concepts and in thoughts and in ideas and show cars, very often to get into the vehicle, to gain vehicle access. So the number of vehicles that can be opened without a key is constantly increasing. And a few days ago, I saw a lady struggling with her car, a very old car, and she was trying to lock it with a mechanical key. I mean, putting a key into a keyhole in a car door and trying to lock that car that way. That was something that I had not seen for ages before. It feels like ages. And because most of us use these keys with a remote access, so you press a button, the car opens, and then you can get into the car and you can open the trunk and whatever you want to do when you access a car. So these keys, whether they are mechanical or whether they are remote, are one way today that we access a vehicle. Another one are so-called tokens. Those are devices that you carry around with you that identify yourself towards the car and that unlocks the car. For example, if you touch the door handle or if you touch any other part of the car. So my Harley-Davidson motorbike, which is a 2016 Road King, has one of these tokens. It is a round device, about 1 inch diameter, about 6-7 millimeters thick, and I just need to have it in my pockets. And when I go to my bike and I turn the central knob, then the bike is ready to be started with a start button. But you do not need to take it out. You do not even need to handle it. You just need to have it with you. Some applications talk about smartphones having exactly the same role as this token. You just need to have it with you. You do not need to find it. You do not need to take it out. You do not need any kind of interaction with it. You just need to have it with you. And another way of vehicle access is biometrics. The Korean car OEM Hyundai has two vehicles on the market in China that can be opened with a fingerprint. So the technology is there. It is more or less serious ready, and you can use that. Porsche is experimenting with face recognition, but there will be a second method of identification, either a token or a smartphone. Problem with face recognition is it can be cheated, it can be fooled with photos. So the next step will be a 3D face recognition, which is much harder to be fooled or to be cheated. And Apple has applied for a patent that uses a two-factor identification, Face ID and smartphone, to open a car. So it seems like they want to apply that. When, if one day they should have a car on the market. The big advantage of biometrics is you always have it with you. It is with you anyway. Where you are, your face is, your iris is, your fingerprints are. There is never an empty battery, and it is very individual. Even identical twins have different fingerprints, have different iris patterns. So yeah, there is a it's highly individual. There are a few disadvantages though. There are recognition problems. Every now and then, when I travel to China or to the US, then my fingerprints are taken, so they are recorded on my passport, and then you have to press either one finger or five fingers or all 10 fingers onto a sensor. And that takes quite some time until these machines are convinced that I am me and that these are my fingerprints. and then you have to replace them, you have to do it over and over again. And so there is a recognition problem with fingerprints. The environment around cars may not be controllable, so there may be snow, rain, and sometimes the copy making is easy, pretty easy. So with the recognition there's problems, and with the environmental factors. And if you have a facial recognition and you wear a face mask as of today, or if it is cold, you have a scarf around your face, you have to remove it. Maybe you wear glasses or not. And I mean, all those are problems that are connected to the different kinds of biometric access technologies. By the way, the system of Unai uses capacitive detection for the fingerprints, not an optical. That makes it harder to hack it, and it has a better detection rate. So maybe the capacitive detection opposed to the optical detection, which is the standard today, maybe a step forward. So we discussed the vehicle access with the biometric data. There's also other parameters that we can control in the car. It is very often used for the individualization of the vehicle. For example, setting the air condition, setting the radio, making the right seat adjustments. Whatever you do, if you know, all right, Peter is entering this car and not his wife is entering the car, because my wife has different tastes, totally different body measures. So she needs a different adjustment of the car for herself. What is also, and this will be in the next part, I will have a closer look at this one, but it's about wellness, tiredness, state of health, dangerous situations. So for example, you can adapt the car to the driver's condition, saying, okay, this driver is pretty tired, or the person is having a serious health problem. So you can use the heart rate, for example, for that. Or even to set alarms and say, hey, you should stop right now and either have a break or call an ambulance because there's a serious problem. Whatever you may think about this one. You use your own body. So it's a provision of one's only body to steer technology, to open a car, to tune it, to set it up. And it is specific to your personal body. And the individual characteristics of parts of yourself are used to make technology accessible and to fine-tune it to your requirements. And it's not some neutral electronic part, but, and this makes the closeness of the biometric technology that you use parts of your body to steer technology. Okay, second technology, which is also about closeness, that is driver monitoring. We are having various technologies that monitor the interior, that, for example, monitor the driver's position in the car, how is he or she sitting in the car. There is a constant monitoring, a surveillance of the driver while driving. The technologies used are either radar or cameras or infrared cameras. There may be a few more, but those are the ones I'm aware of. And they are used in sometimes in combination, sometimes as a single technology. But radar, cameras, infrared, that's roughly the technologies that we have there. And they are measuring the body position. Is somebody sitting upright in the car? Is he sunk down? Is someone at all in the driver's seat? It can also measure the head position. So is the head in the correct position? Is it falling to the side? Is it falling to the front or the back? So, is the entire body in the correct position to perform the driving test? You can measure the direction of view, the eye movements. So where is a person, where is a driver looking at? Is he or she having her eyes on the road or on relevant parts of the instrument cluster? Or is he or she looking outside the side window or at a smartphone? So I have seen devices at 2020 CES that were pretty good in that, in detecting where are people looking at. Another measurement that is used is the pupil diameter or the pupil movements that you have. That is something I could talk about another 3 hours, because I wrote my doctoral thesis about exactly that, measuring driver condition with the pupil diameter and pupil movements. But I won't get any deeper into this right now, but this is a parameter. And during my time at a big German automotive OEM, we did quite some research on this one and trying to implement this into fatigue warners that will warn people when they get tired while driving. All these technologies can derive mental and cognitive demands, can derive mental and cognitive states of drivers. A lot of that is connected to artificial intelligence, learning about if somebody is looking like this or sitting like this, that, or having eye movements like this, then he is nervous, he is tired, he is whatever. But there's also an emotional recognition, particularly through face recognition. Is this person positive? Is this person aggressive? Is this person suck? So all this is possible by measuring the or surveilling the driver with driver surveillance technologies. They are on the market. I was surprised to read while I was preparing this podcast episode that Lexus implemented the first driver monitoring system in 2006. It was first of all about alertness and fatigue. And this is still the main use case of it. Warning the driver, control of activation and attention. When you get tired, when you get distracted, when you have problems keeping your attention alive. Big question with all these technologies is, what do you do with the information that you gain? So do we need to brake the car? Do we need to set alarms? How can these alarms look like? So this is not really clear, and I discussed this 20 years ago when I was at the big car OEM, and we did all this basic research, and we were asking ourselves, okay, if we know that somebody is already very tired or will fall asleep in a few minutes or seconds, what do we do in that situation? And today you get an alarm, you get maybe rattled at your seatbelt, which is something a French car company is testing. So you have various interventions that are possible. Question remains, what is the optimal thing that you do? One future application of driver monitoring is in automated driving. So on level 2, which means that the car is driving mostly or at least in certain situations by itself, but the driver is in the control loop. You can control the driver if he or she is still in the control loop. We read about all these different the accidents with different cars of an American electric car maker. And some rumors say, okay, there was not even a driver in the driver's seat, or the driver was sleeping or whatever when all these deadly accidents happened, these fatal accidents happened. But this wouldn't have happened if you have a driver monitoring system and either alarming the driver or stopping the car. So if we have this level 2 functionalities and more automated cars, then we will also have the need for driver interior monitoring systems. On level 3 and 4, the driver is allowed to pull him or herself out of the loop, out of the driver's, the driving, the control loop. but needs to be ready to take over in certain situations. And this willingness, the readiness to take over the driving task can also be detected with a driver monitoring system. These systems will be mandatory in new vehicles from next year on, at least in Europe. I'm not really sure about the rest of the world, but this will come and this will be standard in a few years from now. We have a very close proximity of technology to humans. Your body, yourself, your being, your behavior are measured inside the car. It's analyzed and it leads to changes to activities. It leads to certain behavior of the technology. So it's a very close thing. You put yourself into a certain situation. You're measured, you're surveilled in that. And then at the end of a day, you are changing parameters of the car with that. All right, let's move on to technology number three, which is not about closeness between humans and technology, but about getting more distance. And this technology is more just like a framework. I don't want to call it a buzzword, but it's a container word that is used, and it's called ShyTech. So ShyTech means technology that is shy, technology that hides itself, that makes itself invisible when it is not in use. Some examples are already widely used today. For example, gesture recognition or voice recognition is at the end of the day ShyTech. You don't see a microphone. You don't see all the electronics behind it. But you can activate it when you want it by saying, hey car, do this, or hello Google, or hey Siri, or whatever keywords are there. So you activate that. The same with gesture recognition. If you use the certain gesture sets to do something in your car or in other environments, you don't necessarily see the camera. So the technology is shy, it is hidden. And you only recognize it when you get some feedback. For example, when the car turns the temperature up or the seat heating on or whatever you want to do in your car. Other sensors that we are using a lot, that we see a lot, particularly in show cars, is sensors under wooden surfaces. So you have a surface that looks totally like a piece of wood. And when you approach it, there is an illumination behind the wood showing the icons what you can do with this. And then you can touch it, and then you can interact with these systems, and then you can pull back your hand and again looks like a straight piece of wood. You can also use this under glass, and the black panels or dead front ends, is it called in design, so that you have a piece of material that is not obviously containing any interaction devices, but it does contain them and you can activate them, for example, by approaching them with your hand. Another one shown by BMW at the CES a few years ago, HMIs woven into fabrics. This could be both sensors, so that you can touch a piece of fabric or even press it, or that you have illumination lights of different colors woven into it so that you get a reaction of it. Another example of morphing of ShyTech is the morphing controls of Continental. You have a straight piece of a leather surface or a plastic surface, and if you approach it, if you get your hand close to the device or close to the surface, then devices are popping out. So they morph out of a straight surface, and allow you to control them, to do things, to press a button or to shift a lever or whatever you want to do there. All this technology has a clear advantage, and this is the visual simplification of HMIs, of car cockpits, of whatever. So it looks super straight. You get into a car and it looks great. You say, hey, this is simplified. This is not overwhelming me. There's not too much technology and too many buttons in this car. It looks very simple, very straight, very clean. So that is something that particularly designers love a lot, to get back to very clean surfaces and cockpits. The big disadvantage is you have to have a knowledge about the availability. You need to have a certain, you have to bring a certain knowledge into the interaction situation to achieve an interaction at all, just to trigger it. If you don't know that behind this piece of wood or glass or leather that there is some interaction device, you will never know it. Yeah, maybe accidentally, but it doesn't talk to you. So there is no initiation of the interaction by the technology. So ShyTech is creating distance. This technology actively withdraws from the user's consciousness. So it withdraws from our visual sceneries, and it disappears out of our consciousness and makes itself invisible. Big question is, best HMI is no HMI, is a phrase I've heard lately. Is this the dream of the ideal technology that we have, or are we causing new problems, or are we moving problems to a different level? I'm not really sure about this, but I like the idea of a certain amount of ShyTech in cars to create a distance, to create a ShyTech and then clear surfaces, and to create better designs in cars. All right, let's summarize this one. In the history of technology, there are many discussions about proximity and distance, about how close technology should be to us. We have proximity and distance problem until today between humans and technology. Some technologies create a closeness. They create a reduction of distance. They impose themselves to the driver, and others are creating a distance. Examples for the first ones I mentioned are biometric measurements in cars, around cars, with cars, and the driver monitoring system we're gonna face, and other technologies withdraw, like the ShyTech in its various forms. If you like this podcast, if you were able to take something with you, why not recommending it to someone else, to one person in your network? The more people listen to the podcast, the higher it will be ranked at the various platforms. The more, again, people will see it, and the more have the chance to take knowledge out of this. That's it for today. Thank you for spending time with me. I hope you were able to take something with you and do something for yourself that will be forever. For an ongoing exchange, you will find me on LinkedIn and on my websites, peter-rusker.com and beyond-hmi.de. Write me an email on the podcast at beyond-hmi.de. Tune in next time. Take care and stay healthy.